Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast about the humans behind the commits. I'm here today with Patrick Rowland. He is the host of Plugin FM and does other things in the space. Patrick, why don't you tell us about yourself and who you are and what you do?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Patrick Rowland. So I do run a podcast called Plugin.fm. So if you want to learn about marketing software, that's what we talk about there. I'm also really big in the e-commerce world. So I've done a lot of stuff with WooCommerce in the past. And I currently work at sort of an enterprise e-commerce scale for a company called Zero Shoes, building their e-commerce website and, you know, enterprise. And then I also do some cool stuff for LinkedIn Learning. And then outside of WordPress, I have a board game I designed behind me. I made a Star Wars helmet last fall. So I do all sorts of weird, fun, nerdy, cool things in addition to coding.
If you're only getting the audio version of this podcast, I would recommend jumping over to YouTube real quick just to see, just for like a second, because people always tell me that my background looks like I'm in a spaceship, but Patrick actually is in a spaceship, I think. Like, I think that literally we've got like the Enterprise behind you.
The Death Star, but yes.
Yes. I stand corrected. So tell me about your, I guess you're sort of in the WordPress space. What is your WordPress origin story?
Oh man. Origin story. So first job out of college, I knew I wanted to go into web. So I worked at this custom web shop. We just built, everything was custom. So it was like, you had to build a login page by hand. You had to build a beer page by hand if they're a brewery selling different types of beers. Like, everything had to be its own CMS. And I just got tired of building login pages. That was like, I like building custom stuff because then there isn't like a million menu options that people can get lost in. That's what I like about the custom side. But the thing I really dislike about the custom side is you're always rebuilding login pages and like, it's a ton of work to like, you know, upload images and you different MIME types and all sorts of stuff. And you can reuse code, but no, not every site is the same. Anyways, I started basically saying our low-end sites need to be WordPress. And so that's how we got started with a couple test WordPress sites. I changed jobs and then I kept doing WordPress at the new space, at the new place I worked. And then I just kept getting deeper and deeper. That's when I always followed open source and stuff like that. But that's when I, at the second job, a couple of years after WordPress, I finally got into like finding GitHub repos and making fixes there. And that was another deeper dive into WordPress.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever try other open source CMSs besides WordPress? I know back in the day, I was like playing around with Joomla for a little bit, and I did a couple Magento sites, and I did a bunch of Zencart sites. Yeah. There's a thing that I found where like it was sort of like a quasi CMS, where like you uploaded this PHP script or something, and it basically gave you an admin page. The pages are all written in HTML, but it gave you like an admin interface to edit the HTML of those pages. Mm-hmm. Do you ever like play with other things like that?
There were a couple. So I started as a student web developer at university, and we used, Dreamweaver, okay, like page templates, which is, ooh. So page templates, like it's not a CMS, right? But it's just a program that manually updates all of your like HTML, like everything outside of the content area. Oh man, there are some nightmares there of updating things going wrong. I did try Joomla. Sorry, I guess I shouldn't say. I had a friend who also did web stuff, and he showed me some of the stuff his shop was doing with Joomla. I thought it was okay. It didn't blow my socks off, so I didn't dive deep into it. And I should say, I actually started WordPress 1 or 2 years earlier. I think this was WordPress 2 something. And there's something about WordPress before version 2 where it just didn't quite catch me. I'm like, okay, it seems fine. And then by the time WordPress 3 came out, and that's when I was looking for, again, just login pages and uploading media and a couple basic things that I just didn't want to recode every time. Where everything I wanted to do was in WordPress, and I looked at Expression Engine and Play5. Okay. There's a couple other CMSs later, and there were some local people who did Magento, and I saw how they did stuff at a web meetup, they just never called to me. Nothing ever looked that good compared to WordPress.
I always felt like everything was like just really overly complex. I would get lost in the Joomla menus. I would get lost in the Magento menus. I never knew what I was doing. I was building these sites and I was like, I hope you know what you're doing because I don't. Like, I know how to make it look pretty, but I don't know how to use any of this shit.
Yeah. Super complicated. Yes. Like, yeah, again, the thing with the custom CMSs that I like, those are the things that are, it was like, there's, you know, you log in and it's like, do you want to add a new blog post or do you want to add a new announcement bar? Like, those are your two options. There's no other, there's no settings, there's no profile. I like minimal aesthetics, and most CMSs are just exploding with options.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Back in the olden days, I also worked at the university, my university, as a web, I think my title was webmaster.
Yeah.
When webmaster was a title you could have.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what department. It might have been like the HR department or something. And I was literally writing everything in just like plain HTML. I was probably like using Notepad or something. And just like SFTP. Actually, no, FTP is before SFTP. It's just like straight FTP up to the server, which was like some server, like a physical box somewhere on campus. Like, very, very, and like that's like before that, like I the reason why I even wanted to do that in the first place is because obviously I got my start on GeoCities, like that's what you do if you're of a certain age. So yeah, you do a lot of e-commerce stuff. Tell me about how you transitioned into focusing on like WooCommerce specifically and e-commerce generally.
So I was into, okay, so timeline wise, I was doing WordPress stuff for a couple years, right? So doing custom CMSs, doing some WordPress stuff. And then I got my first WooCommerce site, and actually it was WooCommerce on easy mode. It was just like the catalog, not actually checkout, you know, shipping options and taxes and payment.
Yep.
And that was a really nice introduction to WooCommerce, because we were still dealing with that, you know, a couple thousand products. But it wasn't all the complicated e-commerce stuff. I loved it. So, from my very first just building an online catalog, I'm like, oh, this is cool, right? It has most of the options you want. You can add a million extensions to do whatever custom stuff you want to do after that. I loved it. What I think really helped is I started immediately contributing to WooCommerce. I can't remember if it was, it might have actually been some of their like extensions. Like I think at the time WooThemes had a plugin called Testimonials or something, just to add like testimonials to your website in a CMS controlled fashion. And I think there was a filter that was there, but like in the wrong place. And so, you know, I got to know their dev team by like submitting pull requests and being like, hey, this does 95% of what we want, but I think this filter needs to be here. Just some sort of simple things like that. And it really, I think that really got the ball rolling. And then when I saw a job at WooThemes, I'm like, why not try? I applied, and it was really easy in your cover letter. You're like, I've already written code that you guys use that that's a really easy cover letter to write. and then I got on the WooThemes team. So this is, I'll fast forward, but it actually wasn't that long. It was maybe like 9 months, 6 months, 9 months. It's hard to remember the exact timeline. As a support engineer, I worked with WooCommerce subscriptions almost exclusively for the first couple months. Then I went on the dev team. That was pretty short, maybe 6 months. And then I moved into product management, and I was their first basically dedicated product manager for any of their products. So there was a head of product, but no individual products had a product manager. And then I was the product manager for Woo. And I did that all the way up until Automattic acquired the plugin, and then stayed for about 6 months after that. So I was with the Woo team, and I did, you know, everything from writing code for them, support, dev, product management, all the way through the acquisition with Automattic.
So, and that sort of ties into, you said your podcast is primarily about like e-commerce product marketing type stuff.
I think a lot of e-commerce, I would say, is you know, you're selling t-shirts or clothes, and there's thousands of SKUs on the website. Plugin.fm is more for software makers. So generally you have, you know, a software bundle that maybe has a couple different tiers. That's definitely e-commerce, but a flavor of e-commerce, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so tell me about how that got started and like how long you've been doing that.
How did that get started? I forget how, but I met Vova from Freemius. I'm trying to remember how we met, but I think he saw one of my other online videos, and I think he just likes my online persona. You know, like I can be energetic, I can be positive and uplifting and chatty. So I think he liked that, and he wanted someone who could just regularly produce sort of video content for them. And I think a podcast is a way to do that. So anyways, Vove and I talked. I actually think it took us, this is one of those, like a lot of my best projects took years to happen. We should talk about WooSesh a little bit later if you want, but WooSesh, just like this Plugin.fm took, I think Plugin.fm took maybe close to 2 years to actually, like, we made a pilot episode and what do we want it to be? What type of guests do we want to bring on the show? How long? What's the format? It just took us a while to sort of get through those details and plug. And the guys at Freemius are busy doing their own, a lot of their own stuff. And I should say they also have other people who make other video content and other, you know, blog posts and all sorts of other content for them. So I'm a very small piece of the marketing puzzle for them, but I love it. So we get to bring on, so this last season we focused on marketing and we get to bring on all sorts of cool people. I like to bring on people who've done like case studies, like really like a specific unique thing they've done at least one time, as opposed to talking about abstract stuff. Mm-hmm. My big thing is, so working for Woo, I've interviewed hundreds, probably not thousands, probably hundreds of store owners who are all, and almost all of them are struggling to get started. Like the first gate to business is how do you get those first 10 sales, 100 sales that aren't your family? Like you can't include family in that number. Like it's really hard. You have to, like, you know, cause your mom will always say that your marketing looks good. Right. So it's really hard to get that if I can get people their first 100 sales with something that I teach them on Plugin.fm, I'm really, really happy. Cause then there's something in the business and it can be viable and it can grow into at least a side project, if not a full-time job.
Yeah. That's sort of like, I don't know. I don't want to say like the myth of building an online business or even just a business in general, but that was definitely something that I had to learn sort of the hard way when I was freelancing. And then tried to start my own theme development business. Mm. And I didn't want to do Envato because I didn't want to like sell out or whatever. But the benefit of a platform like ThemeForest is that it's got a built-in audience, right? Yes. It's the same reason. Like I've since learned and like now like we chose to make an Etsy shop as opposed to like trying to do it ourselves. And because like there's this idea, this sort of like, naive idea, if you haven't been doing websites for a while on your own, that if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. Like you just put a website out there and then it's on the internet and then people can just go there. Like, yeah, but you need to find a way to get them to go there. And I don't do marketing. Like, I don't know what that is. Like, I can kind of maybe figure out my way through search engine optimization a little bit. There's tools for that that make that helpful. But like, I'm not, you know, tweeting something every hour on the hour or whatever. Like, I'm not like creating a funnel to get people into my site. What's sort of the biggest tip that you give people that you find that helps people get over that first hurdle?
Oh man. Build it, you will come is 100% true. That is definitely a belief that we have online. And I do think that's shifting. I think there's been enough discussion over the last decade plus of how hard it is to get real people to your website. I think that's starting to shift, but man, I wish that topic shifted.
I mean, I still know people that have that kind of idea.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. That is still out there. Let me go high level. I think it's a lot less, you know, like, and I'm in some private e-commerce forums where there are people who have incredible success on TikTok or have incredible success on LinkedIn, have incredible success with postcards. Like there's a wild number of channels, especially when you start talking about like postcard, like physical mail. Yeah. I think what's even more important than that is a process. For me, it's all you have to test each channel for 2 to 3 months. You see if you get results, and then you move on to the next channel. Like there's just no telling. You just don't know what you're good at. Like,
sure.
It took me even getting into blogging. I did a month long blogging challenge with some friends. Again, this is at Woo Themes, so probably a decade ago. God, it might be longer than that. but we did a month long blogging challenge, and the first blog post took up me like 6 hours to write. And you know, it's like 400 or 500 words. It's like, oh God, it took me a minute a word. Like, how does that happen? it took forever to write. It was painful. And then by blog post two, it took half that. By blog post three, it took half that. By blog post four. And it starts getting down to like, oh, this is only like an hour and a half, 2 hours. But I had to go through this 30-day blogging challenge to get good enough to know if I should keep doing blogging. Does that make sense? And yeah. You should do the same thing with, you know, obviously like short form video, like TikTok or reels or YouTube shorts. Like, oh, you should definitely try those, but just give it a month. And then if it doesn't work, great. You can wash your hands. You can try a new thing. Again, there's LinkedIn ads, there's postcard, there's a million things to try, but you just have to try everything. And then, and you can't do everything. That's the other thing. There's the myth of build it, they will come. There's also the, you have to be everywhere your customer is. That is a losing myth. That is a losing myth. If you believe you have to be everywhere, you will burn yourself out. So don't be everywhere. Yeah. Pick two or three channels, and as a channel, you know, and try it for 2 to 3 months. If it's not working, you drop that channel, you try a new one. That for me is the most important thing for, and that's, you know, software creators, but also e-commerce vendors.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting point too. The limiting yourself and also figuring out what you're good at. And also, like, what I heard in that was a little bit of, you're going to suck before you get good.
Yes. Yes. That's really hard. It's really hard to suck, right? If your first video, like, okay, so a blog, again, my first blog post for this challenge took me like 6 hours, took forever. Just to get out of the idea phase took forever. And I think if you're doing a video, I can see that taking you 10 hours, 20 hours. I can see your first TikTok being like, and your first TikTok's going to be bad. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
You're going to spend 20 hours, 10 hours on it, 20 hours, and it's still going to be bad. Yeah, that's very it's very frustrating to have to be bad at something before you get good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about, so I had a podcast with a couple friends we ran for 6 years and then we just stopped hitting the record button. Mm-hmm. And now we just hang out. But the very first episode, so the premise was my friend Gary and I worked together at Web Dev Studios. We really overlapped for like maybe 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
But I onboarded him. Mm. And then we kept in touch afterwards, and he would like come across like bits of my code or like comments I made and stuff. And then he would send me the Fry mooning on like rubbing his butt on the window emoji or GIF on Twitter randomly whenever he came across my code. So I would just get these mooning GIFs on Twitter every once in a while. And then we get in these like weird debates about nothing at all. And, and so another person that we, had worked with that we both overlapped with, Allison, just would sit back and like popcorn, like sort of feed the argument. and she would say that like, we kind of argued like an old married couple. Mm. And that she would, you know, we were like, oh, we should make a podcast, and just argue with like old married couple. And she's like, I would listen. I'm like, well, you came up with the idea, so you should be on the podcast with us. And then it just turned into an actual podcast where where she would like, for the original premise was she would come up with like a random topic.
Uh-huh.
And we would just try to figure out and debate what that topic was without knowing anything about the topic and without knowing what the topic was. So there's like, you know, very few episodes where we knew going, like, we didn't know going into the episode what it was. But there's a few times, only a few times when we knew what the thing was at all. And so we would just like make up random shit to let sounded like plausible. But the very first episode of that podcast sucked. It sucked partially because she couldn't make it. She just gave us a topic and like walked away. And then it also sucked because like we didn't know when to stop. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know how to like have a good. So if you go back to the very first episode of Binary Jazz, I think the topic is barefoot running. It's not a very good show. but from there, like we leaned into the fact that Zoom kicks you out after 40 minutes. And rather than trying to like make that pretty, we just leaned into it just cutting us off mid-sentence. because it was funny, and so it was just like a running joke, like and we did that for 6 freaking years, and that's I think I stand by that, like, you know, I enjoy hanging out with people and I enjoy like just having conversations, and it was a lot of fun. And like, if you think about like the lifespan of a lot of podcasts, like 6 years is a long freaking time. How That's long super... have you been in New York doing your podcast?
We're on season three, and that I also had a separate board game podcast that I made for maybe like 2 years. So that was, that one got up to like 120 episodes. What's it's interesting because it's like three seasons at Plugin.fm, but they're much more like, I don't know, like 15 episodes a season, 12 episodes a season, but they're much more curated. So I only have like 36, 40 episodes of Plugin.fm going on 3 years. My board game podcast, I have, again, 120 or something like that. And that was only like 2 years. Anyways, just interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly cannot say that I know the number of episodes that we did, because we called it Binary Jazz. And the reason why it's called Binary Jazz is because my handle is Jazz Sequence and my friend Gary's is Binary Gary. So Binary Jazz is the, So because we called it Binary Jazz, we counted episode numbers in binary.
Oh my God.
So that was fine. That was fine for a while. And it's easy enough to tick up one, right? Yes. Like I can count by one in binary, but like looking at an episode number now, like to see like what episode we're, I have no idea. Like I stopped trying.
Yes.
But what attracted to you about getting into podcasting in the first place? Like, why is that a thing that you wanted to pursue?
Love it. I would love to talk about podcasting. Let me put a pin in something and we may come back to it. Barefoot running. Yeah. Cause that's the, I work for a company, Zero Shoes. They do, we make barefoot footwear. So we might want to loop back to that. I'm curious on your, I'm curious on your episode one takes, but podcasting. Okay. So I'm just a huge fan consumer of that media. I'm a big fan. I think one thing that's going on in maybe like TV media is, like, I want to hear the best version of someone's argument. Like, whatever this is, it's politics, or I love personal finance. I love some software. I love IT stuff. I love board game stuff. There's a million different types of podcasts I listen to. But I always want to hear, like, the best, most interesting version. And basically, a podcast, you can listen to, like, an hour-long, uninterrupted, ad-free podcast on whatever topic I want to. But podcasts is the medium, right? Like, and it's very personal, and you're usually outside. You know, I have a dog, so I'm walking my dog around the neighborhood. It's very personal. It's very intimate. And it's also like, instead of like, if I want to be a master in a topic, let's say personal finance, you just need to download three personal finance podcasts, stick with one or two of them, and then listen to them for a couple years. And in 1 or 2 years, you're like, cool, I've got like 90% of this memorized now. And you don't have to like find all the right books and the right experts. You can just kind of start with a couple, whittle down to your favorite one, listen to it for a year or two. And then I do actually find podcasts trail off for me after 2 years. And I sort of got most of what I want to get out of the podcast, but I love the medium. I love it's like me time, you know, and if I need to like do cleaning around the house, I'm usually listening to a podcast. So in addition to walking outside, it's also, you know, cleaning the house and doing errands and mowing the lawn and stuff like that. So anyways, it's just my favorite medium. I love uninterruptedness. I love people getting their point across without being interrupted. I think that's it. I don't think there's anything magic, you know, like now there's podcasts on YouTube. I don't think there's anything magic about the audio-ness of podcasts, just that that's the main thing we're listening to. And then the video is like an extra. But anyways, yeah, it's a bunch of cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I find, I also like, have something in my ears when I'm like doing dishes or making dinner or whatever, like just kind of in the background. I got into actual play role-playing games like watching many years ago, sort of like speed ran through Critical Role's like first couple campaigns, and then like got caught up and so like, and those are like, you know, 4 or 5 hours sometimes. And it's like it's obviously not a thing that you're going to be consuming in one sitting. And part of the reason why I did that, talking about board games, is I wanted my kids to kind of get into D&D. I mean, they wanted to get into the D&D and role playing also. And they tried a couple things at like the library, but the library program D&D stuff wasn't very good. And so we just decided that if we wanted them to have a good D&D experience, then we sort of needed to curate that for them with their friends and whatever and kind of do that. So I just like I bit the bullet. I became a DM. The first session was ridiculous. It was chaotic. It was a bunch of like early teens and like tweens. And it was like 11 people playing. It was a stupid number of people. So I started listening to Critical Role, and then I got into a couple other actual plays, partially because I just wanted to just be more fluent in, like you said, like the rules. And it sort of like filters in through osmosis. Like
it does.
You listen to a thing long enough that you stop thinking about the thing. Like it just kind of just becomes natural. Yeah.
Agreed.
Go ahead.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah. I don't feel like I'm learning. When I listen to a podcast, there's like very active learning and then there's like passive listening, for lack of a better word. And you still need to pay attention, but you're not like, you know, I'm walking my dog. I need to cross the street. I need to pick up the dog poop. Like you're doing other stuff and you are how romantic picking up the dog poop. You are still like, you are still learning in the background. Like it is learning through osmosis. And you know, I'm listening to, an Ed Helms podcast, Snafu, right now. And now I have like random facts about the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI in my brain. Like I didn't try to learn this, but just like that's one of the topics of this season of that podcast. And now I have some like really cool facts to pull out at a party or, you know, chatting with my friend last night. Like you do pick it up via osmosis. It is magic.
Yeah.
It is magic.
There is an Audible podcast I listened to a while ago, probably a couple of years ago now, but it was about an almond heist. Like it was about like basically people who hire truckers to deliver their truckload of specifically California almonds to a particular location, pick up the truckload and then drive it to a different destination and sell black market almonds. And then so it went into like the like why would somebody do that and like how does that go and like where do the almonds come from and like all of this stuff. So now I've got random almond facts in my brain.
I love that. Yes. You just pick them up. Yeah. So that's what makes it such a good medium. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
So tell me about your barefoot shoes. So the takeaway from barefoot running was Gary had done some amount of running and I hate running. Yes. And so we both were kind of like, and it was funny because like just left to our own devices and rambling on for way too long. It was like, this sounds like a bad thing. Like, I understand like the theory of barefoot shoes and that your feet are supposed to be not contained in like small boxes that we like shoes are awful. Like I wouldn't do it, but like I get the theory. Doing like running barefoot seemed bad, and that was basically the takeaway of the episode.
I love that. So I have experience with this before. So do you remember those five finger shoes, the Vibrams? Oh, yeah. I tried those. I tried them. I was into the fad. I just got into running right around this time. I got some Vibrams. I ran a couple half marathons. This is like 10, getting close to 15 years ago, half marathons and eventually a whole marathon in Vibrams. So I was very big into those. So I was not prepared. I'm actually really excited because I'm not a shoe person. And now that I've worked at a shoe company for a year, I know things about shoes that I'm excited to talk to people about. So barefoot running is, I'm sorry, we need a visual for people who are on, this is our beat shoe. It's called the Kona. Anyways. So most running is heel striking. So you hit the heel and you roll down. Yep. And actually that to me is like, regardless of protection, like you just, if you start going on long, you start going on, for me, it was half marathons, 13 miles. Once I got beyond that distance, my heels would always hurt. Like there's just something about you're just slamming your heel into the floor over and over and over and over and over again for 13 plus miles. And it just does some like damage. So barefoot, right, is you're generally hitting on the ball of your foot and you're rolling back. So you're stepping and hitting and rolling. That for me, it just intuitively feels better. So I know it sounds wild, but like there's just a big difference between heel striking and rolling forward and landing on the ball of your foot and rolling backward. And I love that about barefoot shoes. Again, this is just for running, right? Like the other thing, so we make the barefoot shoes market now is, man, I never, if you talked to me a year ago, I wouldn't have had any of these facts. where like it's now getting so now casual shoes can be barefoot, and then there's the, you know, it's not about the heel strike anymore. It's about you want to have the wide toe box so your toes can sort of fit in your shoes. And yeah. and then the other big thing is just there's no heel, obviously, on barefoot shoes. Like it's called zero drop. It's as flat as it can be. Anyways, I now work at the shoe company. I get a ton of free pairs of shoes, and I'm finally getting into like shoe fashion. I never used to care what shoes I wore, but now that I have a dozen pair of shoes. I've never in my life had a dozen pair of shoes. I've had like 4 shoes max at any point in my life. So it's a weird thing to get like into a thing that you had no idea you might be into.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked, when I was freelancing, I worked part-time at Whole Foods. And I eventually moved into the specialty department, which if you're not in the grocery business, specialty is usually like cheese and coffee and chocolate and like specialty foods. It's like the high end, you know, stuff. And so I got really, really into cheeses and chocolates because that was what I was selling all day. And also like, you know, the local like coffee roasters. Like we did a tour of one of the local coffee roasters. I learned how they roast coffee and the difference between different roasts, and we did a coffee tasting, and I learned about how coffee tastings happen, like how you're supposed to consume coffee at a tasting specifically, because it's very similar to like wine tasting. I met the founder of like a local chocolate company that makes amazing single origin chocolates. I learned why. So I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I learned the dry environment is really, really good for roasting beans. So coffee roasters do well, chocolate roasters do well, as opposed to other places. There's a lot of random, like I love sort of picking up these sort of like random, and now I'm fully vegan, so like I know a lot of stuff about cheese that like I'm never gonna use again.
let me ask you a question. So are we weirdos who just pick up fun, interesting facts everywhere we go, or is that a human thing? Like the fact that you and I listen to podcasts or we both had jobs where we got interested in the subject of the job, having not been interested in it before we started. Like, is that just a you and me thing, or are other humans like this as well?
I mean, I hope it's not just a you and me thing, right? Like, I feel like there's, I would like to think that most people, if they're doing something that they find enjoyment in, end up learning about that thing. I feel like there's a lot of people that kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say like they're one dimensional, but they don't have as many outside interests, you know? And like, I feel sad because like, what are you doing with your life that you don't have other things, you know? Like there should be things that like occupy your brain more than like the thing that you do at a desk or, you know, at a job for 8 hours a day, right?
So my go-to whenever I meet a new person is, what do you do for fun? That's my go-to question. And it works 98% of the time. I have run into a few humans who I've said, what do you do for fun? And they can't think of a thing. And I'm like, I don't want to say a red flag, but like, this is probably not going to be a great conversation, right? This is
right.
If you can't think of anything you do for fun outside of work.
I remember having a conversation in like the lunch line at a conference once, and they asked me like, what am I reading? And I'm like, oh, I read like, you know, and everything that I could think of was like fiction. And they're like, oh, you read fiction? Like, that was some wild, like an amazing concept, because like the only thing that they ever read was like business books and like self-help sort of thing. And I'm like, how do you read that? Like, I don't like, that's the only thing that you read. Do you read from enjoyment? Like I read to like enrich my life. Like, you know, like I want to learn about other places and ideas and like things that I don't experience in the real world. Like that's what I read for.
That's pretty funny. You know, what's funny is I get where that person's coming from. I was so big into business books for 5-6 years. And I just, there's something about the pandemic where I had to get my sleep schedule sort of dialed in, and I finally got back into fiction. But I never didn't understand why someone would want to read fiction. You know what I mean? So that is weird to not understand why someone would want to read that at all.
So I'll ask your question back to you. What do you do for fun?
My, you know what? I work, so working online all day, I feel the need to disconnect from my screen. Obviously I still watch TV and stuff like that, but I do really feel the need to disconnect from the online world. My favorite thing, you can't really see it in my background, but I have these like little tiny miniatures. Mm-hmm. I love, they're just that, my personal belief is every human likes to do something with their hands. Like, you know, whether it's pottery or cooking or even like turning a page on a book, but like there's something about, humans like to do things with their hands. And for me, it is painting miniatures. It's very therapeutic. It's very relaxing. And then at the end you get a cool miniature and there's lots of game. I have a Marvel game and a Star Wars game. And mm-hmm. I go to tournaments on the weekends and I play my little games for 9 hours. But
that's
really,
not a little game. If it's 9 hours, it's not little.
You're correct. It's so they're 2 hour games with breaks in between, but you okay. know, and a lunch break. So that it's about 9 hours of three games in a row is about 9 hours.
Yeah.
But yes. And I guess a 2 hour game for most people is not,
that's still a pretty big game. Yeah.
You're right. I'm in my miniature world. The flagship miniature game, man, I'm guessing you haven't talked about miniatures. The flagship miniature game, and other nerds will recognize this term, Warhammer. That mm-hmm. game takes like 3 to 4 hours. And if you haven't played in a while, probably like 5 hours, just to like remember all the rules. So
yeah.
A 2 hour miniature game is relatively short.
I never got into miniature gaming. I say that the only time that I got into anything resembling that is in college, I had a friend who was just interested in like game design. It wasn't mm-hmm. even a thing he was studying. It was just a thing that he just liked doing and thinking about. And so he would create what he called low dice games, mm-hmm. which are low dice is basically like, really it was no dice. It was like a handful of pennies that we would flip yep. the flip and like the number of like heads yep. is like successes or whatever. Yep. And so he made a low dice game with a handful of pennies and little green army men.
Oh, cool.
So the only time I ever did any sort of like actual miniature gaming was a low dice game with little green army men on like a pool table.
Oh, that's great. I love that. What a great start.
But yeah, I never got into Warhammer. That seemed way too much of a commitment of time yes. and money.
Yes.
But what you had a board game podcast. Tell me about your board game podcast. Yeah.
It was called Indie Board Game Designers. It's still around. So you can still find it online. It's called Indie Board Game Designers. And the whole goal was to interview. I'm not interested in the talking with John, you know, Asmodee is a big board game company. If you're in the board game world, you may have heard of them. I'm not interested in talking with people at Asmodee too much, a little bit. You know, there might be the occasional designer there that I want to talk with, but it's really about talking with like the one man shops about what game they think is interesting and they want to bring to market. And again, before the kind of world's craziness we're living in with tariffs and all this craziness, before that happened, it was very easy to design a game and then you pay, you know, maybe $1,000 for an illustrator to illustrate the cards for your game. And then you can have it manufactured in China for, you know, relatively speaking, pennies. I ended up running. So, it's not behind me. I made a game called Fry Thief. Very cute little take. It's called a take that game where you're messing with other your opponent's resources.
Right.
And you're just stealing fries back and forth. It's very silly. And I think I raised like $10,000. And with $10,000, it's like I was able to pay for everything and order like 3,000 games, right? It's like, it's crazy how cheap manufacturing is in China. And you see why everyone does it. Right. So I veered off topic from the podcast, but I got really into, I like knowing like, and some designers sell their games. So my second game is called, that's the one you can see, Broken and Beautiful. That one I did sell to a publisher and I get a much smaller cut, but I don't have to deal with any of the manufacturing, storage, mm-hmm. yada, yada. But I just love talking with game designers about that. For me, one of the biggest things is the most challenging thing about games is how do you teach someone the game when you're not yes. in the room? That right. is the, and I, once or twice I let people, I don't want to say push past the question. They just say, oh, it's easy. You play it once and you get it. But I really wanted it because like, because people might not play it once correctly the first time and you play it wrong
almost
or never
certainly
again.
They will play it wrong the first time, given the personal experience.
It's really hard. And I know like, so my spouse is one of those people who can't listen to board game rules. She just has to yes. play it. So you also yep. have to like, I learn best by like, I want to be prepared. And if I bring a new game to game night, I will watch a 20-minute YouTube video of how to play the game just to concisely explain everything to everyone else tonight, that night. That's what I will do. My partner can't do that. So like, you just have to like, how do you, with like a simple rule instruction book, I guess you have a QR code, links to a YouTube video, but like, how do you manage all that for all these different types of learners? Cause if they can't learn the game, they can't play the game. That's
why I liked when it was around the web series Tabletop with Will Wheaton. And now on Dropout, there's a series called Parlor Room, and because it's just people playing the games, and then as they're playing the games, it sort of explains the rules of the games.
Yes.
I learned so much from watching and learned about games that I might want to play on Tabletop that really sort of shaped my interest in board gaming, because my partner also can't listen to rules, and I lose interest if like the rules are not presented in the book in a concise enough way, then I lose interest halfway through. Yes. If it's like a 20-page book, like I'm not gonna read that before, and I would like to watch the 20-minute YouTube video. But I don't always have time to do that either. So then we're like making stuff. And it's like I said, almost certainly the first playthrough, like we'll get three quarters through the game and realize something we were doing wrong. And then like, okay, well, we need to play this again next time. You know, that's already like an hour and a half into the game when we're close to the end game. Like, well, we'll fix it now. And I guess we'll try to remember next time. And the next time is like maybe a month from now or something. Yep. And then we'll probably forget then too. Yep. So yeah, that's definitely a very true, a valid thing. What games are you playing? What types of games do you go in for?
So let me first say, if you like Will Wheaton, I was lucky. A friend of mine got his, so I joined a board game designers club a couple years before the pandemic, and basically all me and two buddies that I met there all got our games published, which is really cool. My buddy who had his game published called The Alpha. It's a really cool area control game. If there's board game nerds listening to this, it's an area control game where you're wolves hunting for food. Anyways, they got Will Wheaton to do something like Tabletop, and I got to play in that as well. So me and we're all online, because I think, again, this was maybe in the pandemic, but we were all playing online. So anyways, I got to play an actual game with Will Wheaton, which was magic. So what type of games do I like to play? I love short games, like games that are less than an hour, because I have a kid now. I don't know how anyone has free time for anything anymore. I'm still reconciling having a child and having no free time. So like short games are magic. That's really important. And then I hate take that games because it just,
but you wrote one.
There's caveats. So I did make a take that game. The nice thing about Fry Thief is it's not, I play card, I steal a fry, you play card, you steal a fry. It's, I'm the salad player, I have special rules, and my cards work this way. You're the fry player, you have special rules, your cards work this way. Asymmetric.
Yes, thank you.
Yep. And that, to me, like, changes the dynamic a little bit.
Yes.
But I think for me, it's mostly the feels bad, and when unintentionally, like, if you're playing a game with a married couple, and they both pick on you, like, it's just kind of like, do you guys realize that you might be teaming up on someone else? Like, cause they're a married couple. They don't want to pick on each other. Like, there's just weird dynamics and take that game. Yeah. So I try to avoid that. So Broken and Beautiful is a game where you can only indirectly harm other people. So like by the last card you take off the table, there's a card left and that affects everyone. So like you don't choose which card to leave on the table, but you do choose which is the last card you draw into your hand. That affects everyone at the table. So it's a very indirect method of like harming other players. So it doesn't feel nearly as bad. So anyways, I try to get around those issues by, but with interesting mechanics where you're not directly player one, you lose a point. That to me is not very interesting. So,
yeah. So, what's your favorite? What's your current favorite game? I'm sure you have at least one. And I'll add the caveat that it doesn't have to be one that you've played recently because you have a kid. Because I understand how that goes. And like, there's definitely several years where we just like weren't playing adult games or playing like games that were designed like cooperative games that were designed for kids. And like, simplified rules. There's actually a gaming company, or was a gaming company, I don't know if they exist anymore, that made really good games for kids, but with interesting enough mechanics that adults could play without getting bored. It wasn't just a bunch of go fish. It was actually mini versions of area control type stuff, and other things so it was more interesting. But what's your current favorite?
So I'm looking forward to those, because that's a very near point in my life I'll be able to play games with my kid, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Is it Haba? Haba is, I think, the publisher that makes more kid games. Anyways, I'll have to look into that. Okay, let me, I have a couple games upstairs that I just love all the time. So one of them is the most board gamey, is Tiny Epic Dinosaurs.
Tiny Epic Dinosaurs. Okay.
Tiny Epic is a series. Yeah. If you see Tiny Epic Blank, that's a series that they make, and all their games are in this sort of, you know, what 7x5-inch box or something like that.
Easy to stick into your carry-on luggage.
Yes. I small games, small and short games are what I love. The thing I like about Tiny Epic is they do really feel like there's a full game in there.
Yes. That's what I've always observed from Tiny Epic games is they're called, it's right there in the name, right?
Yes.
It's tiny. It's small enough to fit in a backpack, but it does feel like a much physically larger game. It doesn't feel like you're playing a tiny game or just a card game or whatever. There's some of them even have miniatures that you can move around. It feels like a game that could have been in a standard size, shelf size box.
Yes. And this is, if you're, again, so for the board game nerds, this is a worker placement game. So that would be things like Agricola or I'm trying to think of other classic worker placement games, but it's a worker placement game. And basically the goal of the game is you're trying to raise the best dinosaur ranch. So you're raising dinosaurs to sell them, but of course it's dinosaurs. So if you don't build enough fences or you don't have enough resources, if you don't have enough money to feed them, then they break out of their cages. And then if a carnivore escapes, it also eats another animal. And if herbivore escapes, it breaks another fence. So multiple animals are just going to be rampaging all around your dinosaur island if you mess it up. It's very fun. And again, there isn't really a take that element. It's just, did someone take the space on the board that you wanted to get the two leaf tokens before you did? That's the most you can do. But I really like it. And I think it's good because my partner is not a board game person and I can get her to play that game. So I really love that one. Okay. Very quickly. Slap 45 is a certain cards come flipping up on the table. And when a certain cards come up, you have to slap the middle and point to someone and shoot them like a Western, or you have to slap your home base. And I think then you're safe in your home base. So it's just a very quick reflexes, super light game. That's a 10 minute filler game. I also love a bunch of those 10 minute filler games. I also love Liar's Dice, Perudo. Where which you've seen in Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
Yep.
But you're looking at how many dice, you're guessing how many fives are on the table. You only see your dice. That's a really fun bluffing game.
Yeah.
Those are some of my favorites. I'm sure I have more that I'm not thinking of.
Yeah.
What about you?
My current favorite, I just got into Dune Imperium last year. I just got a copy of that. And so I really, really like that. It hits a lot of, it hits a lot of the right sort of sweet spots for it's not just one, it's not just a worker placement. There's other things. It's sort of asynchronous, asymmetrical. Thank you. it's just a lot of good things. We're playing, I really like Wingspan.
Oh yeah.
And we just got Wormspan recently. Uh-huh, so we've been playing that a little bit. There's a couple games that I have that we don't play enough. I've got a game called Guildmaster that I really like, which is basically leaning into the D&D sort of role playing theme. It's as if you had your own guild, your own thieves guild, your own merchants guild, whatever. And so you hire heroes and then you send them out on adventures to go out and make money for you. And then the team that has the player that makes the most money or does the most things or builds up their guild house, the best ends up being the winner. There's a lot of things I also kind of lean into I really like Lords of Waterdeep. I've been told there's other games that do the same thing way better, but I still just love the flavor of Lords of Waterdeep because we've got so many stupid games. I built a plugin a plugin to track. It's called Games Collector, and it's basically just it's a WordPress plugin. It's on GitHub, and it's so that you can just track your game collection, and it has an integration with the Board Game
Geek, BGG,
with the Board Game Geek XML API, so that you can when you're adding a game, you don't have to just add it all manually. You can do a search for that game on the Board Game Geek API, and it'll fill in all the details for you, and pull everything in. And I partially wrote this because my father-in-law was like, I don't know what games you already have. And like, I'm going to write a plugin and I'll have a page on my website and you will know what games we already have. And I also built it with the idea that you could set number of players, how long it takes to play the game, what the difficulty level of the game is, and then you can have these filters where if you're looking for a game, like, I've got five people at this party, we're going to look for a game that's five people and up. They're beginners, so we're going to look for something that's not super complicated, and then it'll filter down the list to see, these are the things I have in my collection that fit that criteria.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. BGG... I as a website person, I've hated that website for so long. It's so ancient looking. But then eventually I realized that talking to all these other board game designers, like, I needed a presence there. And I had to add all my games on BGG, and I wish there was an easier to use plugin to add all of your games to BGG, because it's old school interface for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like we're coming up on time and wow, it's kind of flown by. Where can people find you online? Are you going to any events where people might see you in person? Have any links to share?
I would love to say I'm going to WordCamp US. I cannot confirm that. I would say it's a coin toss, but I'll explore going to WordCamp US. But the main place to find me online is Speaking in Bytes. That's BYTES. So .com. That's my programming blog. I talk about all sorts of WooCommerce things there. Check me out on plugin.fm. So the podcast is great. Talk about interesting marketing for software. And those are the two best places. You know, I'm on Twitter, but that's a weird place now. And then LinkedIn, but I don't check that. So yes, my website or the podcast website are the two best places. I'd love to connect with you there.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on, Patrick. And thanks for everyone sticking out or geeking out on board games. I'll see you online.
Bye.